gentlemen. How's it going? Good. Have we got everybody there? Okay, great. Yep. I'm on with Ken Thorne. Yes, sir. Oh, no problem. Let's see. Okay, who else we got on the line here? Pete, did you say? Who? Keith. Oh, okay. Yes, I do remember Keith. Keith, what's your last name? I don't think I knew that. Every second I learn something new. Let's see. Mini Touch. Part 1. Today's what, the 10th? Oh, my God. Holy moly. My life is slipping by me, Ken. I don't know, just like, I can't believe it's the 10th already. It doesn't seem possible. Okay. What's that? Damn, it's like June Bug City here, you know? Hey, what was I going to say? What's new in Ohio? Yeah? Wow. That's because it was my birthday this weekend. It had to be nice. Yeah, it was beautiful. It was beautiful here. I bought a 91 LeBaron convertible, bright red with a white top and everything, and I threw my kid in the back, and my mother came down and her boyfriend, and we all went out for a cruise in the country on dirt roads. We must have gone half an hour on completely dirt roads, just not near anything in northern Pennsylvania. Just cruised around, and boy, just came to work this morning just so relaxed. It's amazing. You got kids, right, Ken? Yeah, a couple. I was going to say, I knew you had a couple. Yeah. Keith, I kind of remember what you look like, but I'm not positive. What area were you working on when last time I came there? Okay, yep. All right, that's the guy that I'd pictured. Yeah, you were just starting then, right? Oh, okay, because that was probably... What was it, Ken? 97, the last time I was there? Yeah. I know it was a while back. I know you were working on... Mostly what you had in the shop was the old body style Fords, and you had a few of the new ones, so it must have been a while ago. Keith, what was your what's your background prior to being in mobility work? And how long you been at Tri-State? Wow. And what'd you do before that? What is it? Oh, okay. That's totally different. Now, what do you mainly do, Keith? Are you the guy... All right, now wait a second. Oh, you're the guy who designs your own relay packs, Keith. I know who you are now. Yeah, you're the young guy. You had long black hair at the time, and you were real young at the time. Okay, yeah. I remember. I'm sorry. It took me a minute. What's that? That's right. You were real young then. Now you're just young. Yeah, you were like, oh God, you were like, yeah, you were like 20 or something like that at the time, right? Okay, now I know who you are. All right, yeah. And you blew me away. You were the guy, who was designing your own relay packs for everything and then doing it. That's amazing. But it's a big pain in the ass job, though, isn't it? The ability to do it is one thing, but boy, the ability to do it and not drive yourself crazy and get the job done on a timely basis and all that, you know. Yeah. Well, of course, every once in a while, Rex will bounce it right back to you and make you do all the research, so. Yeah. Yeah. What was I going to say? Okay, so at least I know who I'm dealing with now. Yes, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, you impressed the daylights out of me. You had designed a relay pack for a Chevy Lumina, like about a 1990 or a 1991, Keith, which has a multiplex turn signal circuit. And you were telling me how you're doing, and I'm looking at you. I'm like, this guy's like 10 years younger than I am, and he's designing all these relay packs. I was pretty impressed by that. Yeah, oh, yeah, right. Must be Dave, huh? Cool. All right, let's see here. That's good. Okay, basically, what I do in the Mini Touch training is it's not so much, you know, the basics of putting it in are pretty straightforward. What we want to focus on in the training, though, and Keith in particular, wants you to understand really what's going on inside, okay? And so that when you're to give you basically a diagnostic approach to the system, okay? most important thing is let's say that you have you know. When you talk about how the circuit works. Now, Keith, you've done like automotive alarms and stuff like that. You've done keyless entries, right? Keith? Hello? Hello? Yeah, hey Steve, it's Tom Egan. I was on a training call with Steve and Keith, and all of a sudden I got cut off. Hey, I don't know, man. All of a sudden I was talking to myself more than usual. Oh, wow, that's cool. And it's funny, there was a big click. Before I stopped hearing your voice, it was a huge click, and then all of a sudden you were gone. Yeah. Okay. So what I was about to say, I was asking Keith. Have you put in keyless entries and things like that, right, Keith? Is he there? Okay. You've done alarm systems. Okay. Basically, you know what code grabbers are? You know the what are they? No, you know what thieves use a thing called a code grabber. what they do is they stake out your car, they can sit in the parking lot, okay, and wait for you to press the button and then they record it, okay? Now the older technology for a remote is that it would always send out the same signal. So if you just were able to capture that signal and memorize it, you could send out the same thing. And then they came out with the next generation in technology was anti-code grabber or code hopping. So what basically code hopping radio transmitter does is it sends out a series of frequencies in an order that only it and the receiver know. Okay? So for example, Ken, when you go out and you hit a mini touch, right? Every time you hit the mini touch, it always activates that function, right? So you would think that it's sending out the same signal. What it's doing, in fact, is cycling through a whole sequence of codes that each knows that the next time the code is going to change slightly and the code will be this. And then it goes through like, 10,000 cycles and it gets back to the beginning. You understand what I'm saying? I don't know how many it is, but it's a lot, okay? So if somebody grabbed your code, it might only be good one time out of 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 or something like that. I don't know what the number is, but I know it's a big number. So this is a code hopping encrypted signal. That's so what does that how does that translate in terms in useful terms? And if you remember, Keith, when I went out there and I was talking to you about the Mini Touch, the InfraTouch, it had the same technology. It never used the same type of signal. It was always an encrypted signal, and it changed as time went on. Actually, the early version of the InfraTouch didn't, but it was always an encrypted signal. So the only way that you could get it, it could not be activated by just some random sunlight or something like that. But it could, if somebody had a receiver right there, they could, you know, capture it and then send it out. But that's not so much of a problem with Mini Touches. You know, what's the worst thing? The thief's going to turn your left turn signal on. But what is important, though, is that if they lose the sequence, okay, or one thinks it got a confirmation signal when in fact it didn't, okay, they can get out of sync. So we're going to talk about how do we resynchronize a Mini Touch to its unit. And what will generally happen is one of them will receive some sort of a massive stun electrically, and generally it'll be the receiver, and it will lose its memory. So it'll still have the same code, but it doesn't know where it is in the cycle. You see what I mean? Exactly. It's like you're in a Rolodex, okay, and you know, somebody had flipped the card open for you, and you were looking at the phone number, and you don't remember what the name of the company was, and you know that it's somewhere in there, but you can't find it. Okay, so it's the same type of thing, or it's like when your hard drive gets messed up. The information's still there, but you can't get at it. Okay, so that's the same basic technology that we're using here. it has to have very good reception because it's a complicated signal that it's putting out. It's not just a carrier. Okay, so let's think of it in those terms and try to understand what the diagnostics might be. So basically, with a Mini Touch, you have a radio frequency device. Let's just take a little time out for sales, okay? You had experience with the InfraTouch, and you know what the InfraTouch is about and what it does and everything. The disadvantage of the InfraTouch, even though we did a good job at overcoming those disadvantages, it had two transmitters so that if you had your hand over one, and I remember when I was out there, I did a demonstration for you guys of how much you really have to cover that InfraTouch in order to get, you know, to block the signal. But you could block the signal, okay? Or on a really, really, really sunny day, okay, you know, when there's just blasting sunshine everywhere, it, you know, you could cover it up, and it wasn't that awful hard to be able to cover it up. With the Mini Touch, it's absolutely impossible to cover it up. So the other thing about the Mini Touch is it's embedded down in the steering wheel versus up there, and a lot more present and a lot more interfering with the airbag. Okay, and the other major difference between the products is that the Mini Touch is a hell of a lot cheaper than the InfraTouch. About half the cost, a little over half the cost. And we noticed that for years and years we sold a few InfraTouches, but we didn't sell a whole lot of them. Now we're selling probably easily 100 times the sales level that we had before from dropping the price by half. So, you know, it really made a big, big difference. All of a sudden, the evaluators really kicked up on it. So clearly, it's a price-sensitive kind of item. You know, when your whole system is $3,000, as it was often with the InfraTouch, you know, now we're dropping down to high teens to mid-twos. That seems to make a big difference. It really does. You know, most of the dealers, you know, pass that cost on to their clients, and all of a sudden it just seems to make a difference. So when you're pricing one of these out, remember that price does seem to make a difference to the client. It is vehicle specific. When you get it for that vehicle. You call us, absolutely. And the reason being, first of all, they're Crescent packs underneath, okay? It's Crescent that's building everything for us, okay? But the difference is we get to put it together, we get to make sure that we test it, and you don't pay anything more. We have a price structure with Crescent. It's the same as if you ordered directly from Crescent. It doesn't matter. What you do save on is you save a little bit on shipping, and you save a lot on hassle. And we take complete responsibility for it then because it's being shipped to us, okay? We're repackaging it and shipping it to you. Well, we don't mark it up 10 cents, nothing. We make absolutely nothing on the packs. What we charge you is exactly what we pay. And as despite the fact that you're one of Crescent's biggest customers, we're still a lot bigger. So the likelihood of us getting, you know, a worse price is pretty minimal, you know. And, basically I think that if we're not their biggest customer, we're damn close to it. You know, we order a lot of stuff from them. So just kind of, you know, just basically order it through us. That way everything gets put together. It's all in one package. It arrives to you, and you don't get one thing before you need it or the other thing before you need it. So it makes it simpler for you. Okay. basically, diagnostics. Let's talk about diagnostics. Okay, you guys can easily look at our application chart and figure all that stuff out. I'm not going to waste your time, you know, going over that. Diagnostics is the most important thing. Let's talk about how can you have a malfunction in a MiniTouch. Where can a malfunction come from? Okay, and what is the diagnostic procedure for approaching it? Okay, and you know, where do you say you have a bad MiniTouch or bad relay packs? Okay, very, very simple. and I know both of you, part of this is going to be insulting your intelligence, but we'll have covered everything. Okay. That's pretty sharp, actually. Ken's always got the comeback, doesn't he, Keith? Yep, he's got a whole bag of them sitting right there. You gotta stick a poker in there, man. You know. Okay, so basically, let's say that you have a malfunction. Let's say that we're failing to activate one function. Okay, so you've hooked up. Typical functions will be turns, high beam, low beam, wipe wash, and horn. Okay, that's going to be your standard MiniTouch relay pack that fits on a 6 function. We have a new version of the brochure now, which has a chart which helps you on the back to figure out how many things take how many functions. So, for example, turns takes 2 functions. Wipers, all of wipers takes only 1 function. So it helps you. It's just a little chart. So you basically check off each thing that you need. You add up the number of functions, and you figure whether you need a 6 or a 12. Obviously, it's available in a 6 or a 12. It's different from the InfraTouch in that it's 12 true functions. The last 3 functions of the 11-function MiniTouch were the last function of the MiniTouch was diagnostic. We called it a 12 function, but really we should have called it an 11 function. But the last 3 functions of the original InfraTouch were what we called composite functions. So you needed to hold one thing and then hit the other, which a lot of our clients couldn't do on the fly. So really we were kind of in the neighborhood of 8 functions. And then you could get more, but you know, clients weren't too happy about that. So now we're at the point in our diagnostics where we have a function, let's say, that is not activating. Okay, let me ask Keith. Okay, let's say you have a function that's not activating. Everything else is working great. Naturally, what would you think to do, Keith? Okay. All right. Another typical function would be, you know, and the way that we'd recommend to approach that is disconnect. Exactly. We have 2 separate systems that are designed to interact with one another. Okay, but sometimes, Keith, they will interact in a way that we don't want. Okay, so there's good interaction and there's bad interaction. The way that we'd recommend in a situation like that, okay, is to disconnect that particular function wire. Run a probe, okay, a ground probe, you know, just from the ground right to Rex's relay pack. Obviously, his relay packs are ground triggers, and so is our output in the correct millivolts, and they're designed not to spike one another or, you know, cause problems. Rex's relay packs are equipped with what are called opto-isolators. Do you know what those are? Okay. Basically, inside that board there, Keith, the biggest phantom that we fight with relay packs is spikes, right? Relay packs, because Rex's relay packs are now all solid state. Did you know that? Okay. Well, one of the things that he did even before he went all solid state was he added opto-isolators. And what optoisolators do is ensures that any kind of an inductive discharge that could occur from his relays, because he's still got mechanical relays, I think, at the outputs, okay? Any possibility of what's called inductive discharge. You understand what inductive discharge is, right? Inductive discharge, let's say you have an electromagnet, Keith, okay? We activate the electromagnet, right? So you create an electromagnetic field, all right? And the electromagnetic field expands, okay? And in the very beginning of hitting a coil, okay, of putting power across a coil, you have, for a very split millisecond, a dead short circuit for just a microsecond. And then immediately as the electromagnetic field is created, then you don't have a short circuit. You have whatever the current draw is of the electromagnetic coil. Okay? That's just the way it is. Now, so there's all this energy of that initial short circuit that is stored in that electromagnetic field. Well, when you disconnect it, okay, you create the reverse of the current that was put into it, a very, very high voltage discharge. For example, a typical relay pack, if you actually were able to measure it on an oscilloscope, okay, you know, that could record a timeline, you would get about an 80 to 90 volt inductive, very, very split second voltage peak. Okay, it's huge, even for just a regular automotive relay. Regular automotive circuits are designed to handle that. Okay, but you've got all of a sudden 90 volts going the wrong way. And that can be enough to screw up some electronic circuits. Everything that you and I are used to putting into an automobile is designed to be protected against this. But some things, you know, this can happen. Well, what an optoisolator is it the way that it connects the crescent relay circuit, okay, to the mini touch is across an optical gap. So in other words, there is not a wire coming from that input, okay, into the relay pack. Literally, it's not a wire connection. It's an optical isolator that sends an optical signal that activates the connection from elsewhere. So the ground comes into Rex's relay pack, okay, branches off into his control circuit, and then branches up to the opto-isolator. Okay, and when the optical signal is given, it simply makes a connection from the incoming ground to the input. You see what I'm saying? So it just basically totally bridges over and completely avoids the connection with the circuit. You understand what I'm saying? Okay, let me put it this way: there is no physical connection. If there was a massive spike coming from Rex's relay pack, okay, the only connection between it and our circuit is optical. You see what I mean? So actually, it comes from the positive in the other direction. So I mean, basically, it's just an optical connection. So when a negative signal is present at the mini touch output, okay, Rex's relay pack translates that into an optical signal, which then triggers his system. So if something comes in the wrong direction from his control circuit and tries to travel back up the input wire, it can't do that because it's optical. You see what I mean? So this helps us to understand, and it helps you to understand what's going on. So if there is a spike coming from Rex's circuit, we know that it's coming probably on the positive wire from his circuit. So there's some sort of inductive discharge or something, or some gremlins in the power circuit. We know that it's probably not going to be Rex's relay packs themselves. That's important to understand. Okay? So that's why I say I try to give you information about what's going on inside the box so that you can help you in, so that it can help you in your diagnostic thinking. Okay, so we're back to the situation where we have a lack of a signal, or we have lack of an activation of a particular function. Let's say it's horn, okay? You press the horn button on the mini touch. Step number one, okay, you're not getting the signal. Step number one, is the LED lit on the mini touch? Okay? Yes, the LED's lit on the mini touch. Okay? Does it act like the other ones? Is it the same, you know, frequency little you know, blinking kind of light. Yep, okay, sounds good. You disconnect the input, the output of the mini-touch on the trigger wire from the input trigger wire to Rex's relay packs. Trigger it by providing a ground. Does the system activate? Okay. Let's say that, yes, it does. Okay. Does this mean that the problem is not in Rex's relay packs in any way, shape, or form? Not necessarily. Okay. Because, again, we could still have a phantom signal stunning the mini-touch. Okay. This is where we run into situations where we have a warranty situation. Okay. We send you a new mini-touch, and it works great, right? We figure it must be the mini-touch, right? You replace the mini-touch, and now it works great. 2 months later, they're back with the same problem, okay? Chances are we have a stun signal coming up through that trigger wire, okay? Because remember, Keith, all electronics is a circuit, right? Electricity can only travel in a circular pattern. It's got to come from, you know, the positive side. The electrons come from the positive side and they travel, they come from the negative side and they travel to the positive side, right? So when you think about it that way, okay, the electricity is literally coming, the electrons are coming from the negative trigger of the mini touch, okay? They're traveling into Rex's opto isolator and they're traveling back down the positive wire and to the battery of the vehicle. Okay, so it's coming from the negative post of the battery of the vehicle through the mini-touch, providing a signal, going down into Rex's opto-isolator, and on the other side of Rex's opto-isolator, it's then traveling back down the positive wire into the positive terminal of the battery. That's how electricity actually travels, although that's not how we think of it. That's how it travels. Okay, so you have that circuit, and so if something is happening to screw the mini-touch up, and we have ruled out the mini-touch, which is, you know, there's ways that we can do that, we know that there's some sort of phantom signal coming from there. Well, that causes us to look down the positive wire for that particular function. So we know since we have an opto-isolator, it cannot, even in theory, be coming from Rex's actual relay pack because of the superior design of his relay pack. But it still can be coming from the power circuit. Okay? How can we possibly block against that? Well, we can put, remember that when spikes come, because of the way that inductive discharges work on a coil, we know that when you have an inductive discharge, it usually works in the opposite direction of normal current. Correct? So that means that if we, and I know you've done this before, Keith, because I do remember having a conversation with you about this, What do you do when you have a relay that's screwing up some electronics? I know you and I talked about this at one point before. It's to do with a diode. We talked about this once before because you ran into this problem with an InfraTouch. You take a diode and you put it across the control relay in the opposite direction so that the diode does not conduct electricity under normal circumstances. Okay, well, that's one way that we can approach this. You ever heard of diode-protected relays? Okay, did you know why they were diode-protected? Exactly, okay. Well, that's exactly what you're doing, because Rex's control circuit does not have diode protection. So if something crazy is going on somewhere in the car that is, you know, spiking the whole electrical system of the car, it can send a trigger, it can send a short circuit essentially up the wrong wire into the mini touch, which can confuse the mini touch. Okay, so if you are experiencing a problem and you have located it down to the level of the crescent relay pack is stunning the mini touch, you know that it can't be Rex's circuit itself, but you know that it could be the power wire getting a strong spike going up that. The way that an automotive electrical system works is very hierarchical. So it's not like there's one big trunk line that runs all the way up and down the vehicle. You know, everything, it's like branches on a tree. Okay, when you get to the level of the mini touch, if you're coming off of the fuse block, okay, you know, you're way up high in the tree. So generally it's one of the leaves or the branches around your neighborhood that's causing the trouble. Okay, for example, wiper motors are famous for that. Okay, wiper motors can have, especially on an older vehicle, can have a wicked inductive discharge, particularly on a Ford Taurus. Okay, they can have quite, you shut off a wiper motor, man, and it can have it sends out a wave of spike through the entire vehicle. Okay, that's something, you know, to kind of suspect. So how do we protect ourselves here? Well, two ways. One is a shunt, a diode to shunt in the wrong direction. So it's a diode that under normal circumstances is not going to do anything, okay? But under the circumstances of a spike, it will shunt that spike away from Rex's relay pack, thus the input of the mini touch. Second way that we can protect against that is a large microfarad capacitor, one of the big ones like you used to use on radios to get the ignition static away. Okay? Similar kind of thing. Those work very well. 1,000 microfarad, 2,000 microfarad, big fat guy. Okay? That's another tool to put in your arsenal. And everything that I just said for the Rex's relay packs also applies to the power circuits on the Mini Touch itself. Although we have found that the power circuit on the Mini Touch tends to be more immune than the power circuit on the relay packs. When we have dug down through some of these gremlin type problems, we have found that it's usually the power circuit on the Crescent relay packs that is causing the problem rather than the power circuit for the Mini Touch, and often they are the same. So what you can do is just go have, you know, one common power line for both of them and do the same thing to both of them. Okay, just use, you know, one set. And make sure that you use a pretty heavy-duty diode that is designed. There's diodes that are made for that particular purpose because they have to have a very quick response time. Okay? And if you need a part number, if you ever get to that stage and there you need a part number like a Mauser part number or something like that, we'd be happy to provide that to you. Okay? The other way that we have found in avoiding these kinds of problems tends to be go closer and closer and closer to the stump of the tree, you know, or to the base of the tree. Okay, the closer you get to the battery, the fewer gremlins you have, because the battery essentially, as you guys may or may not know, is like one big capacitor. Okay, if you have a massive spike, okay, you know, the battery says, you send electricity in that direction, I'm going to soak it up. So it's really like a big capacitor. The farther and farther you get away from the battery and the skinnier the wires that we're connected to, the more the local activity kind of takes over. Does that make any sense to you guys? Okay. Exactly. 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 Now, Keith, you know what a capacitor is, right? Okay. What does a capacitor do? Okay. It stores energy. That's exactly right. Okay. What is a spike? What is a spike? You said a capacitor stores energy. What is a spike? Energy. Okay. What is a battery in addition to being a power supply? It's a BFC. It's a big capacitor. Okay. And that's really what it does. You think about what a battery does. It does the exact same thing as a capacitor does. Okay. So the closer that we get to the battery, the more it's going to absorb the spikes. So therefore, another way of combating gremlins with the Mini Touch is to move closer and closer to the battery. The problem that we run into with that is, functionally, we would not want to do that. Because A, it's a hell of a lot easier to not have to run the power to the battery. B, in most cases, there is no problem. C, you give up the ability to be ignition controlled. Okay? A lot of these functions, we don't want the Mini Touch having a tiny little bit of current draw while the vehicle's off. Okay, our goal is zero current consumption when a vehicle's not in operation, right? Well, the Mini Touch has a teeny bit of current consumption, and therefore we don't want to connect it, you know, at other times. Now, if your evaluator says the horn has to work at all times because if they get stuck in the vehicle, they want to be able to beep the horn, you know, and let someone know, and maybe they can't get the key in the ignition or something like that. Okay, fine. We're going to leave it on all the time, and we're going to instruct the client, you know, don't let your car sit for a month and a half, you know. Well, hopefully that's not going to happen anyway. Okay, but these are all things to consider. Back to our diagnostic circuit problem. Okay, we have the horn is not working. Keith separates it out, okay? First thing you do, again, you want to say Mini Touch is on this side, relay packs are on that side. Trigger that particular wire, okay? Does the function work? Let's say typical situation is, yes, it does work, okay? Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe there's a problem with Rex's relay packs, but let's say that, you know, I'm not dealing with Rex's relay packs, I'm dealing with a Mini Touch here. So we trigger it, and everything works fine. Okay, now you hit that button again, and with a voltmeter, okay, you trigger that function, okay, and you know you're not getting a reading. Okay, well, what's the problem? Well, chances are, let's say we had another scenario where none of the functions are working. Almost invariably, you have a synchronization or a programming problem. Okay, there is included in your packet. There is a set of instructions on how to reprogram the Mini Touch. Okay, there's a programming button. You hold it down for like 2 or 3 seconds. Okay, release it. Activate any function of the Mini Touch for 2 seconds. Release it. Then activate the Mini Touch again. All right, and it resynchronizes the two, and you'll never remember the thing, and I don't remember it either, but it's written down on the piece of paper. Yeah, it's there. So you just follow that instruction that resynchronizes them. Okay. Right, the old one you did, and we made it so that it's a lot easier. You don't have to take the cover off. And that avoids warranty issues because we can tell whether the screws have been taken out, and you know, then it runs into a warranty issue. This way, that's the only thing that you need to go inside the box for, and we eliminated that. Okay, so the basic idea is, it could be a software problem inside, or it could be a hardware problem. We want to separate out whether it's a software problem or not. The synchronization is the only software problem that we could have. It's an EEPROM circuit. You know what that means, right? Hello? It's an EEPROM circuit. It's like the Easy Reach, the controller circuit for the Easy Reach. It's one of those things where it's software inside, but it's kind of burned into the chip. Okay? So it's not like a Vangator 2, which has what's called volatile memory, where if you lose power to a Vangator 2, okay, and then power it back up, the Vangator 2 forgets where it is, right? Right. All Access Unlimited products are different from that. Okay? We use EEPROM technology, which literally, it's burned into the chip. It doesn't matter. It never loses its memory. It all of a sudden, it's got the inputs. It knows the state of the switches. It knows where you are. Same with the Mini Touch, same with the Easy Reach, because all the electronic circuits are designed by the same engineer with the same principles. Okay, so you've got that one thing separated out. Okay, you triggered it on the relay pack side, it works. You measure the output from the Mini Touch, it doesn't work. Okay, you know, you're not getting this signal. You go through the synchronization process. Okay. Let's say that it still does not work. What would your next step then be? You would then open up the transmitter. You can have a bad battery. One of the features that we had on the InfraTouch that was nice that we no longer have on the Mini Touch, and we're working on getting this, is the ability to have an LED indication of whether the battery is good or not. Right now, you just kind of can see it. The light just doesn't light as bright, and it's kind of very... the LED, when you depress a function, is just kind of dim, and the frequency is lower on the light blinking. You know, instead of being real perky, it's kind of just slow and very dim. But if you don't have a good memory of what it used to look like, that's not a really good indication. So one way that you can do it, and I would recommend if you do a lot of mini touches, stock a battery. They're like $15 and they're a lot of money. They're a special battery, but they're very, 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 very incredibly long life. The battery has something like a 25,000 cycle lifetime. Yes, they come from us. You can order one. And, you know, after you put in 3 or 4 mini touches, I'd recommend have a battery in stock. Okay, so the next step then would be to replace the battery or to inspect the terminals. We have rarely found that the battery was dead because the mini touches have only been out for 3 or 4 years. But what we do find sometimes is that somebody smashed it or whatever and kind of bent one of the terminals, so it's just not in there right. So take the terminals, tweak them back very carefully because it's right on the circuit board. Tweak them back, you know, take a little steel wool, clean the terminals off, get it in there, put the battery back in, try it again. Some circuits seem to be just, if you got the voltage is a little bit marginal, you know, some of the transmission circuits are a little bit more sensitive than others. Okay, try that. If all of those things are fine, you still have a problem on that one output, then you've got a bad receiving unit. Call Access Unlimited, get an RMA number. But remember that if you replace that unit, chances are that what really happened was we got a spike coming up the trigger wire. So you should then do some or all of the protection measures that I told you about to make sure that this does not happen again. Okay? The diode, a shunt diode, and a large value capacitor. I probably, particularly if the client, really needs the ability to control it with the ignition, I would not go for the battery until, you had another one come back and had to do it again. Okay? We have had almost no cases that I can think of where when we did all of the preventive measures, including going to the battery. A couple times we've had to go right to the battery when we've done all that stuff, and it still kept on coming back. Except for a short period about 2 years ago, we had some bad receivers, but most of them have just been, pretty straightforward. So if if you do all of those things, we're going to lick it. But one of the things that the MiniTouch has been very, very good about is it's almost completely impervious to electrical noise, etc., etc. There are some recommendations, though. Okay, first of all, we do recommend that outside of your trigger wires, which we do accept, blade connectors, we ask that you try to solder your other connections, okay, basically your power connections. Okay. That's not an absolute 100% requirement, but it's a way to just keep our diagnostics to a minimum. All right. Obviously, Keith, if you're up there and God couldn't get up there with a soldering iron to the fuse block, we're not going to shoot you. It's mostly in the crescent relay pack connections to the vehicle that you're more concerned about soldering. This is nothing that's ever been proven to be a big problem for us. We just recommend it as a general practice. But however, we do, because of the time and the energy involved and the lack of any kind of a history of problems, we do consider it to be perfectly acceptable in, weatherproof areas to have the blade connectors for the trigger wires. Because a lot of times you'll want to reassign them too. When the client comes in, it's like, I have a hard time getting at that one. Can we put something that's more popular in one area and not in the other? Okay. Exactly. Easy swapping functions around. Exactly. Okay. So as far as diagnostics, you want to keep the receiving unit away from sources of EMI, electromagnetic interference. Okay, so keep the sources away from them as much as possible. Typical sources of electromagnetic interference are large wiring harnesses, particularly wiring harnesses pertaining to wiper and wash. The wiper and wash motor is the most famous one. The fan motor is the second most famous one. Yep. So you try to stay away from those as much as possible. It is completely acceptable to attach the mini-touch wiring harness, because that's usually the most convenient thing, using wire ties only, to a major trunk line, you know, going under the dashboard. That's fine. We don't require that you attach it to steel or whatever, but, you know, good solid wire ties, that's perfectly fine. If you do that, though, try to bridge it between, like, two wiring harnesses or something like that. Having the bulk of the wiring harness go right by the circuit board, it's probably not a good idea either. Okay? Because remember that each wire has its own magnetic field, right? When current travels through a wire, you know, we've all seen the metal filings on the ground and the welding, you know, the welder wire, you know, that goes right across the floor of the shop, and you see that all the metal filings arrange themselves around the wire, right? You've seen that. That's an indication of the electromagnetic field of that wire. Well, each wire in a wiring harness has its own electromagnetic field, and it can, if it's right smack up against the circuit board, you know, on the other side of the plastic, it theoretically could affect the mini-touch. Again, we have no proven examples of that, but why tempt fate? So bridge that sucker between a couple of wiring harnesses, that's fine. Just don't have it right smack up against the unit. Okay? The antenna is pretty flexible. You know, you keep it as far towards the left. Usually you're putting it right under the steering column somewhere. You know, keep it pretty far to the left. Generally, the stuff that creates problems is more towards the right. You know, the wiring, the wiper motor and the fan motor are off towards the right in the vehicle. So go as far as you can to the left. You know, as much as you can, avoid wiring harnesses, but if you have to be near one, it's fine. And if you can attach to, you know, the upper side of the knee bolster, fine, you know. And remember that you got to take it apart later on, you know. It makes it easier. excuse me. So as far as diagnostics and installation, you know, that's all you really need to know other than following the diagrams. The next thing we need to talk about is ergonomics. Okay. How do you lay out a mini-touch? Right now I'm going to fax you, you probably got in your packet a diagram which gives you little spots to label the different functions, and then there's a table with the correspondence between circuits and switch numbers. Okay, this is primarily to help you, or even you can give a copy of this to your evaluator that's making the recommendations, because it's very important. Most evaluators currently are not specifying where they want the functions, and they should be, okay? Because it really has an effect. You know, who is the mini-touch for? The mini-touch is for generally 75% of stroke people. Well, you know, you ever have a stroke person, you know, Ken, where they come in and your place, the bathroom's down the hall and on the right, you know? And then they come in and they get their vehicle done and you say, it's down the hall on the right, and they end up in the parking lot, you know? Exactly. These people tend... Yep. Exactly. Why do it? So, to be proactive in this situation, Access Unlimited has provided you with the tool. You hand that sheet to the evaluator. You say, write it down, buddy, okay? And then that helps you to put everything in the right place. However, the chances are, like everything else, Ken... Yep. But now, let's just say this, okay? If everything happens as it normally does, okay, what's going to end up happening is you're going to end up being part of this decision-making process, or you're going to end up educating the evaluator on it. Okay, so let's talk about what are the important characteristics. All right, and what I want you to do is, do you have the mini-touch right there? Okay. Why don't you get it? Because it's really good to have it kind of right in front of you here. Okay. Well, I got a 20-month-old who's busy getting into trouble, so that keeps me out of trouble. Up, just playing in the band every weekend. We play out, and that's my fun. Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I mean, I love playing music, and it's just a lot of fun. And I got six-piece band that I'm in, and we just have an absolute blast. I mean, it's just a great group of people, and it's just like when everything else is going wrong, you always know there's Friday or Saturday night, you know? Go out and grab the microphone and play a little harmonica and have a good time. But I got divorced. That kind of stinks. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What we're looking to do is, can you kind of assemble it real quick? Yeah, just take a second and assemble it. If you have a little sample steering wheel there, that'd be handy. Yeah, that's fine. Just stick it on there because it's going to help you to understand the ergonomics of it. That's what we're really going to talk about now. Doesn't matter. Yes. Well, not the big square box, the little one. Okay, so can you kind of assemble that and put the clamp on so that it's on the wheel, on the inside of, okay. Take your time. And by the way, you can buy that whole deal separately, $65 for the knob. And that'll you can get that sucker in. That has 3/4 of an inch of inside diameter that it takes up. So basically, you can get it into the 2002 Caravans at the 4 o'clock position. The 2001, Yep, right in the airbag area. Okay, good. Now, I want you to put it up, let's say, at the 2 o'clock position, which will be very typical. Okay, like you got a left-affected hemi. You seem to get more left hemis than right hemis. I don't know why. But 2 o'clock position, okay? Now, I just want you to use your index, okay, grasp the spinner knob with your middle finger, ring finger, and your pinky finger, and just manipulate the buttons with your index and your thumb. Your index and your thumb operate on different axes. They're almost 90 degrees different. Right. Now, tell me which ones are the easiest ones for you to operate and which ones take a little bit more thinking. Mm-hmm. You got a 12 function? Okay, so that's correct. The ones in the center. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're correct in saying that it's easier to do the center ones. Okay, now your thumb works real nice to do the bottom ones, okay? But pushing out with your thumb is really designed to pull in. Okay, your thumb is not very well set up for pushing out. Okay? Your index finger is your finger with your greatest dexterity. Okay, it's the one that you use to dial an old style phone or to, you know, key things in or whatever. So your index finger, although it's set up on an up down axis, it's set up on an up down axis. It does very well right to left also. Okay, but it doesn't reach too well. Okay, because it's shorter than the other fingers. Okay, and then every finger but your pinky. Okay. So these are all things to think about, okay, when you're trying to figure out, you know, kind of which way to go, side to side, up, down, whatever. So basically, you want to keep your most popular functions in the most convenient positions. So let's talk about two competing goals. Okay, one of them is going to be quick access in an emergency. Okay, that's very important. You may not use the horn very often, but boy, you want to make sure that it's easy to get to when you need it. Okay? And then there's the other thing is, what do you use all the time? Okay, well, based on our experience, here's what we know. The most important emergency function is the high beam, low beam. Is the horn. The second most important emergency function is wash. And believe it or not, wash is a lot more important than you would think. Yep. So those two are very important. Of those two, horn is the most important. Okay. Now, let's talk about the other side of the equation. What are your most popular functions? What do you use more often than anything? Think again. High beam, low beam. Use that a lot. If you travel on a regular road, you're going on and on and off and on and off and on and off. Now, depending on your situation, okay, turn signal, you know, if you're in the city, it's going to be turn signals hands down. If somebody's out in the country, okay, it's going to be high beam, low beam. In terms of the number of times that you need to access that function, okay, things that are much less important are going to be wipers. You hardly ever go for those things, okay? wash you almost never go for. Okay, but you have to be able to get it quickly in case of an emergency. All right. Cruise on is not very important. If you have a 12 function, chances are you have cruise on. Okay. But cruise set, again, depending on information that you have from that client, could be a very important one. They do a lot of highway driving. They may use cruise set more than anything. I mean, you could be on and off of that quite a bit. Let's say they drive a lot during the daytime on highways. Chances are, the biggest function for them is going to be cruise set. They'll use that more than anything else. So think about the ergonomics of the switch. Generally speaking, okay, your index finger, towards the inside of the steering wheel top tends to be a little hard to do. okay, towards the inside of towards the outside of the steering wheel top is a little bit easier to do, but not as easy as it could be. One of the easiest functions you'll use with your thumb is anything towards the middle of the switch bank, okay, towards the outside of the wheel. That's pretty easy with your index finger to push it in, push it towards the outside, and it's very easy with your thumb. Your thumb is, it almost puts your thumb right where your thumb wants to be. Yeah, they really do. So either one, center switches towards the outside, are very easy and very quick on the reaction time, okay? Center switch towards the inside of the wheel is not bad, okay? Bottom switch towards the outside of the wheel is very easy to do as well, easily accessible with the thumb, and bottom switch towards the outside is a little clumsy, and it's definitely not a quick reaction time one, because your thumb is a, it's got big muscles and it's not very sophisticated. You know, take, yeah, now just take both of you, I know this is kind of kooky, but take your hand and put it straight up so that you're looking at the side of your hand, okay, with your thumb towards you, okay? Now just take and work each one of your fingers and see which one's got the quickest reaction times, okay? You know, try to take your thumb and wiggle your thumb, okay? Your thumb, your index finger's on the same circuit, but your index finger has got a lot more precision in the movement, okay? Your middle finger's not bad, and then your pinky and your ring finger are almost useless. Yep, but that's true too, and that's okay because we're separating things out. But just is, but that gives you an idea of the relative strengths and weaknesses of your thumb. Now, your thumb is very good at pulling in a very precise manner, but it's not very good at pushing out in a precise manner. Your index finger is pretty good at everything, okay? It can do side to side easily, although it's not as good as side to side, and it can do push and pull pretty well, okay? So bear those features of the average human body in mind when you're figuring out what to put where. And most importantly, educate the people who are making the recommendations so that you spend less time screwing around doing their job and more time doing your own. But be educated about what's important, and then that way the most important thing is, as you all know, you know, Keith, you, I, the evaluator, and the client, we're all links in a chain, okay? And it doesn't matter, because everybody's going to blame everybody when something goes wrong. Am I right, Ken? I mean, you of all the people in the world know that that's the situation. You know, everybody's going to blame everybody. Everybody's going to point to everybody. That's just the way it is. Okay. What's that? Who worked on it last? That's the one who gets sued. You know. So the bottom line is, you know, we need to make sure that there's not a mistake. So you need to be kind of looking over this evaluator's work to make sure that he doesn't leave egg on your face, he or she. Okay, so that's kind of what we need to think about. Think about it. Think about how the guy's fitting in there. Think about which way his fingers work. Try your own fingers. Learn about the client. Get information about them, and try to make it as easy as possible. And remember that as you change, we're talking about the 2 o'clock position. Well, as you change positions, just try it. See how your hand works. Your hand has the same relative strengths and weaknesses probably as the average stroke victim on their good side. The average stroke victim on their bad side, we're probably not dealing with that. We're not dealing with a mini touch on the bad side. Sometimes you will be dealing with a mini touch for an MSer on the bad side, and his, you know, on his good side, and his good side may not be the same as yours. So that test may not be valid. You may need to just kind of talk to the guy. And, you know, the easiest thing is wiggle your fingers, you know. Grab this pen for me. Write your name, you know. See, kind of see what his coordination level is. Exactly. That's basically it. The second part of our training, guys, is going to just involve you calling me back. We'll review your installation, talk to me about how you did it, answer any final questions, and then we're all set. You'll get a certificate in the mail for each of you, as long as both of you attend both sessions. And are there any questions? Okay. I do know you in notes. I remember seeing those notebooks all over your desk. That's right. Now, Keith, how about you? Any questions? Okay, good. All right. I hope that you feel that it was worth your time to talk with me about the product. And I hope you don't mind, us having the training requirement, but it's really to ensure that each and every installation is going to be good and is going to be successful. And the most important thing is that if somebody's not around to give you technical support on this thing, to give you the diagnostic procedure and you can do it yourself. I mean, there is really almost nothing that you would have in a mini-touch technical support phone call that we have not covered here. This covers basically all of our experience, and the good news is it's pretty damn simple. If you follow that procedure and you still come up with a dud, you've got a bad receiving unit, and then we look at the root causes. The mini touch itself, I hate to sound like EMC or something, but it's unlikely that a mini touch would just, start misbehaving for no reason at all. That's not to say that we don't RMA a lot of mini touches that probably weren't caused by us, because you don't want to stick the client, and our company that manufactures them for us kind of accepts this, and unless there's some real evidence that somebody, put 2,000 volts across it the wrong way, they're pretty good about RMAing it for us. The comp We have a company that a subcontract manufacturer that ma an electronics house that makes them for us. So, also, if as you as always with All Access Unlimited products, if you guys have suggestions, and I, your company probably can more than anybody, any other company. Your company is a good company for us to listen to for input. You've given me lots of good input on our products in the past, and a lot of it we've incorporated into the products that we have. A couple of the tips that you guys had on the multi-lift, we changed it. I know that as a result of input from you, we changed the design of our low dash adapter. Because they were bending before, and you suggested a different way of gusseting it, and we implemented that. So we listen. I mean, if you come up with a good idea, chances are we'll use it. Okay, sirs? All right, I'll wait for you to call back. That would be a good idea. That would be a really good idea. It's much better to schedule them than just to do them, Okay, good enough. Yeah, and usually, I mean, this is a 5-10 minute. It's a 5-10 minute call, not even that, usually for the second part. So I'm not so picky about the second part. If it takes 5 minutes out of my day, I don't mind doing it. So if you do, if you have an expectation of when you might have this done, you might want to talk to Catherine, is who's in today. And if you don't, then just give her a call. Okay. Let me put you on with Catherine then. Go ahead and take your best guess at the time. Okay. Okay. You could even do it today if you wanted. I mean, I'm pretty open. All right. Let me put you on with Catherine. You figure it out with her, okay? Thank you, sir. Bye. Hey, Catherine. I got an appointment for a mini touch training part 2 to be scheduled on line 3.